Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this very day back in which year that the Victor Talking Machine Company of Camden, New Jersey, began to manufacture the Victrola. The hand crank unit with horn cabinet sold for $200. Which year was that? Was that A, 1886, B, 1906, C, 1926, or D, 1946? The Victrola. When was it first manufactured, anyway? And question number two, it was on this very day in 1947 that U.S. President Harry Truman's daughter did what? Was it A, ran away from home and successfully hid from view for about 1 year? Was it B, gave her first public performance as a singer at the Hollywood Bowl? Was it C, began her career in advertising as a featured tap dancer? Or was it D, publicly protested the dropping of the atomic bomb that was ordered by her father against the Japanese in 1945? President Truman's daughter did what on this day in 1947? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August 22nd. Well, it was on this very day back in 1862 that French composer Claude Debussy was born. Debussy was known for such compositions as Clair de Lune. He was among the most influential composer of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. He is sometimes seen as the first impressionist composer, although he vigorously rejected that term. Born today in 1862. And it was 44 years ago today, 1981, that Mark David Chapman was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison for the murder of John Lennon. In 1998, on this very day, 17 years after his sentencing, Chapman said that he did not want any of the money that would be made from the sale of the signed Double Fantasy album that John Lennon signed for him that day that Chapman killed him. Chapman is currently serving his sentence for that December 8, 1980 murder. And in country music news, we have this article titled, Country Star Gets Candid About Life After Husband's Death. This is written by Grace Gallant in the News and Observer and in Parade magazine on the 10th of August, 2025. Lori Morgan is opening up about her husband's death for the first time. On June the 1st, the beloved country star announced that her husband of 15 years, Randy White, had died from cancer at the age of 72. According to Morgan, her late husband was rarely ill throughout their marriage, so when his nagging sinus issues were diagnosed as cancer in April 2024, it was earth-shattering, she said. Though the singer and her team arranged for him to receive treatment at a top cancer center, White insisted on being treated locally near their small Tennessee town. However, Morgan claims his treatment was administered incorrectly, and she believes that radiation he received in the wrong spot in his mouth led to the formation of a hole that never healed. He was on tube feeding because he couldn't eat anything through his mouth because of the hole in the back of his throat. White was eventually moved into hospice, where he spent his final days surrounded by family. In their final moments together, Morgan and White were asleep in his hospital bed when she left quietly to go to the bathroom. In the short time she was away, White died. Morgan says she feels as though he waited for me not to be there to pass away. Only days after White died, Morgan performed a handful of shows and says how she didn't have much of a choice when it came to performing, as bills needed to be paid. She doesn't remember those performances and says she's still agonizing over where my safety place is. Morgan, who released her album Dead Girl Walking last year and has been tour date scheduled through February, credits her band members with keeping her occupied on the road with cards and games, as well as her friends and family with keeping her spirits up. Despite this, she still struggles with guilt over her late husband's treatment. "I'm sorry I couldn't save you," she said. Dvorak's songs My Mother Taught Me introduces our classical music news. The backstory to Dvorak's songs My Mother Taught Me, published in WRTI on May the 9th, 2019. Known especially for his New World Symphony and Slavonic dances, Czech composer Antonín Dvořák wrote a song about motherhood for piano and voice that has become a standard for opera singers around the world. In Songs My Mother Taught Me, the singer reminisces about music passed from one generation to the next. The short art song is the most famous of Dvořák's seven gypsy songs composed in 1880. That year, a leading tenor at Vienna's court opera asked Dvorak to write a vocal work especially for him. Dvorak created a musical setting for the romantic Gypsy Melodies, a collection of poetry by Czech writer Adolf Hajduk. All of the gypsy songs were well received, but the fourth song in the cycle, Songs My Mother Taught Me, remains popular to this day. It's been part of the standard repertoire of opera singers, from Joan Sutherland to Paul Robeson to Renee Fleming. The song has been recorded by such performers as Joshua Bell and Yo-Yo Ma. Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun introduces our pop music news. It's titled The Most Iconic Debut Albums in Pop Music History. Pop music has produced many iconic stars, but these artists had some of the biggest debut albums to be released ever the last 40 years. This is written by Paul Elliott in ScreenRant.com on the 11th of April, 2025. Every so often, a pop star emerges with an iconic debut album. This is not an easy feat to accomplish, however. When it does happen, it transforms these up-and-coming artists into global superstars. Whether pop, rap, or rock, a great debut album can be life-changing for an artist, laying the groundwork for an iconic career and providing them a chance to compete with industry elites. In the past, many artists have said Michael Jackson set the standard for pop music stardom. This is similar to groups that have tried to live up to the Rolling Stones, or how pop punk artists have been compared to Blink 182. The best way for them to stand out is by making a name for themselves right away, ensuring fans would never forget. Cyndi Lauper, album She's So Unusual, from 1983. Helping the pop genre remain sought after in the early 1980s, at a time when rock and roll was dominating, Cyndi Lauper burst onto the scene, making an immediate impact. Thanks to platforms such as MTV, Lauper's song, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, became a sensation. The music video is one of the most recognizable from that tune. She even dabbled in working with the World Wrestling Federation to further promote her rising career. The album produced another world-renowned track, Time After Time. It became Lauper's first number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. After a few more songs from the album ended up charting, it was confirmed that Lauper didn't have just a great album. It was a true masterpiece. It even helped her earn two Grammy Awards, one of which was for Best New Artist, further cementing her place within the genre. Other debut albums featured in that article: Olivia Rodrigo's 2021 album, Sour; Lady Gaga's 2000 album, The Fame; Christina Aguilera's 1999 self-titled album; Mariah Carey's 1990 self-titled album; Britney Spears' 1999 album, Baby One More Time; and Whitney Houston's 1985 self-titled album. And in local music news, we have this article titled, Night Music, Nighttime Fishing Excursions Attune the Ears to the Unseen Creatures That Make Up Nature's Chorus, Each Singing Its Own Song in the Dark. This is written by T. Edward Nickens, and it's published in Our State Magazine, September 2025. We carried 2 fishing rods apiece and had a pocket full of hooks, lead split shot, we masked with our teeth, and a tube of 100% DEET, bug dope, so strong that the smell burned the inside of our nostrils. We traveled light because we weren't supposed to be there in the first place. Stretched out on the far end of the docks at Oak Hollow Lake in High Point, beyond the illumination of the security lights, we looped the fishing lines around our big toes and laid the road rods beside us. That way, when we knotted off, any catfish that took a liking to our globs of worms would tug on the line, which would tug on our toes and wake us up for the fish fight. We thought that was pretty smart. Since we knew it was against the rules to be on the docks after dark, smart wasn't exactly what we were shooting for. But the loop around the toe? That was brilliant. Except I never knotted off. Not once. Lying there in the cooling evening with the warmth from the sun seeping into my back from the dock's wooden boards, you would think I would just zonk out in an instant. Instead, I lay there, wide awake, mesmerized by the vespertine chorus. Night sounds flooded in from every direction. The jug-a-rum groan of a bullfrog. Cricket frogs, like marbles clicking against each other. There has to be a million of them. The incessant song of a whippoorwill played from the grassy lawn on the far side of the dark parking lot. A curious splash against the shore. Hard to say if it was a feeding bass or a night heron on the hunt. The longer I lay there, the more I heard. I've been an aficionado of night sounds ever since, especially those accompanying a night fishing trip, which is a front row seat to planet Earth's finest symphony. The truth is, we humans are interlopers in the night. We require a solid dose of light for vision, while many animals, if not most, do not. As the earth spins, darkness creeps across the land like a dark fog. A page is turning, and many creatures stir. They have adapted and evolved to gather, to board, and to hoard and utilize the merest fragments of light, the moon's glow, and the stars' dim sparkle. The eyes of some bees may even contain photoreceptors that gather light for more extended periods of time than a mere glance, like a camera whose shutter stays open for nighttime exposures. Other creatures sport a separate reflective layer behind the retina called the tapetum lucidum that intercepts any light that escapes the retina and sends it back to the front of the eyes for another pass. It's this so-called eyeshine that glows in your headlights when you see a deer or a cat at night. All those adaptations make nighttime the right time for many creatures to roam. And since we light-adapted humans are literally in the dark, we turn to our ears to help fill in the story of the nighttime wilds. Lying on the fishing dock, I would hold perfectly still and purposely minimize any sound, my breathing, the rasp of my shirt sleeve when I scratch my nose, the rustle of fishing weights and now and later candies in my pocket. Hearing is what happens when your eardrums vibrate. Listening is an active state, no less than knocking out a push-up. Just as you can boost your night vision by avoiding light, which temporarily destroys the visual purple proteins in your eye that convert light to electric pulses, I think you can boost hearing by going stone cold quiet. I try to listen past the easy sounds, the shriek of a fowler's toad, the banjo string plunk of a green frog. I pick up the clicky chorus of a field cricket. It must be hunkered down in a hideout somewhere between the dock boards. It's a pleasing sound when you're sprawled out under the stars, Not so much when you're trying to find the raucous rascal that's keeping you awake. Listen, harder. There's the low baritone hoo-hoo-hoo of a great horned owl, a mournful call that seems a bit out of character for such a creature. If I were a great horned owl, I'd be rocking a 1980s hair metal band song more in keeping with my predatory instincts. I pick up the buzzy, nearly non-stop trill of a Carolina ground cricket, and the nagging whine of mosquitoes zeroing in on my earlobes. I didn't say every sound was pleasant. And there's that whippoorwill again. What a chatterbox. A deep breath, and let it out. Listen. And that's when I hear the most marvelous sound of the nighttime chorus. It's like a tiny ripple in the night, a quirky, chirpy, chippy call. A southern flying squirrel has come out to play. Most folks wouldn't believe how many of these little creatures live around us, for they rarely come out in the daytime. But there it is, when you listen intently, a sound like a dog working over a squeaky toy, just on the edge of hearing. I cock my head to glean each detail and decipher each call. Sound is a river, and all those trills, chirps, grunts, and garumphs blend together in a braided aural stream, flowing out of the humid southern night, ferrying me into a world I cannot see. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in which year, that the Victor Talking Machine Company of Camden, New Jersey, began to manufacture the Victrola. The hand-cranked unit with horn cabinet sold for $200. Which year was that? Was it A, 1886, B, 1906, C, 1926, or D, 1946? And the correct answer is answer B, 1906. As noted in the Victor Victrola page, the Victrola, a popular brand of record player, was invented by Eldridge R. Johnson, who founded the Victor Talking Machine Company. Johnson initially worked with Emil Berliner, the inventor of the gramophone. Improving the machine and its disc records, Johnson's company eventually became known for its high-quality phonographs, including the Victrola, which featured an internal horn and a distinctive cabinet design. Here's an overview. Early phonographs. Before the Victrola, phonographs were primarily external horn models, often bulky and with less than ideal sound quality. Johnson's improvements. Johnson, a machinist, was hired by Berliner to improve the gramophone's spring motor. He became fascinated with the technology and began developing his own improvements. The Victor Talking Machine Company. Johnson formed his own company, initially called the Consolidated Talking Machine Company, which eventually became the Victor Talking Machine Company. The Victrola's rise. In 1906, Victor introduced the first internal horn Victrola, a large floor-standing model designed to be a piece of furniture. Market success. The Victrola was a hit, especially with wealthier customers, and became a symbol of home improvement and entertainment. The genericization. The name Victrola became so popular that it was often used as a generic term for any disc phonograph, even those not made by Victor. Later developments. Victor continued to innovate, introducing the Victor Orthophonic Victrola in 1925, which was designed to play electrically recorded records. The legacy. The Victor Talking Machine Company was eventually sold to RCA in 1929. The Johnson Victrola Museum in Delaware celebrates the legacy of Eldridge R. Johnson and the Victrola. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day in 1947 that U.S. President Harry Truman's daughter did what? Was it A, ran away from home and successfully hid from view for about 1 year? Was it B, gave her first public performance as a singer at the Hollywood Bowl? Was it C, began her career in advertising as a featured tap dancer? Or was it D, publicly protested the dropping of the atomic bomb that was ordered by her father against the Japanese in 1945? Correct answer? Answer B. As noted in OnThisDay.com, it was on this day back in 1947 that Margaret Truman, U.S. President Truman's daughter, gave her first public performance as a singer. The event was at the Hollywood Bowl and had an audience of 15,000. Mary Margaret Truman Daniel was an American classical soprano, actress, journalist, radio and television personality, writer, and New York socialite. She was the only child of President Harry S. Truman and First Lady Bess Truman. She was trained as a singer before becoming a writer. She was best known in her writing for her series of murder mysteries that were set in Washington, D.C. So let's close out today's program with John Lennon's Watching the Wheels from his Double Fantasy album that he signed for David Chapman just before he was shot.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. They give me all kinds of warnings, save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. The program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
I just have to let it go. People asking questions.